Welcome to So You Want to Move to the Country and Raise Goats. This podcast features stories from people who have gone through change. We hope that their insights will help you better understand and deal with the changes in your life. I'm Peggy Koenig, and along with my co-host, Catherine Greiba, we chat with insightful people with interesting change stories. We hope you enjoy our podcast. Today, we welcome Carla Combrees to the podcast. As a young girl, she aspired to be a part-time preacher and a part-time teacher. She embarked on a journey of self-discovery through travel and learning. And with a business degree and finally a Master of Science in Sociology, she embarked on a career path with the Canadian federal government. But Carla realized over time that she was not aligned with her true self, and she started to explore and pay attention to those little sparks and what she refers to as her heart crumbs. Carla's story is about following where her heart told her to go. Now, as a legacy guide and celebrant, Carla helps others shape their legacies by following the whispers of their hearts. Join us as she shares her inspiring story of listening to her inner voice and making life's moments truly count.
Well, I'm delighted to introduce our guest today, Carla Combrees, and Carla joins us from Saskatoon. And Carla has a very interesting story. She actually got her Bachelor of Commerce degree from University of Saskatchewan. And Carla, you went on to get your Master of Science in Sociology from Turkey. And sounds like you were having a very successful career with the Canadian Federal Public Service. So how did you decide to get into commerce and choose that as your career? Tell us a little bit about that.
When I was 19, so to back up, I originally thought I was going to become a teacher. So I did my first year of university in education, worked in elementary schools doing French language activities with kids, and sort of thought, you know what, maybe education. I saw a lot of burnt out teachers. There may be even more burnt out teachers, but doing their best, but with minimal resources. And so I wasn't entirely sure that's what I wanted to do. And then I took a year and traveled with Up With People. Do you remember Up With People?
I do remember Up With People. Yes.
Traveled internationally for a year with Up With People, doing musical theater, living with host families, doing community service and different community activities everywhere we went. Traveled with a cast from, I think we were 21 different countries represented in our cast. And as part of that, I did, because there are lots of logistics to organize, I did a logistics internship. And I also did an advanced work placement where I went ahead to this town in Sweden, ahead of the cast with a Norwegian and a Russian. And the three of us arranged host families, did promotion for the show, found the meals, you know, did all the things to get ready for this cast of 100 plus young people from all over the world. And I really liked it. I liked this kind of project work. And I thought, you know what, maybe a commerce degree would have more doors open for me. I saw more paths, more possibilities. And so that's what originally got me thinking a practical path, and it was.
So were you a performer as well, Carla?
Yes. Yep. One of my favorite things to do is to sing, especially to sing with others. I used to do a lot of theater, although I haven't for years. And I thought, lately I've been thinking, once my kids are a little bit less busy or keeping me busy, maybe I'll get back into that a bit. But I do still love to sing and do it as much as I can now.
What an interesting opportunity. No kidding. Wonderful opportunity, and allowed you to really utilize your natural talents for singing, and also to see that you had other talents that maybe you didn't know about around project coordination. So just opening that door and going down that path, I think, probably opened up a lot of other opportunities for you.
It did, definitely. Looking back, a lot of, you know, you kind of see the snowball effect of different decisions you make along the way, and how there are often little pieces of what you've done in the past that remain in whatever next steps you take. So that one was definitely a pivotal one for me as a young woman.
So you embark on a career with the Federal Public Service for Canada, and it sounds like you were doing quite well in your career, moving along. But there was something inside you that you just said, this isn't for me. This isn't my forever job. Tell us about that. Was it always a niggling feeling, or was it just kind of one day you thought, oh, I can't do this anymore?
It was a niggling feeling, I would say, probably from the time I went into commerce. It didn't really feel like it was really me. Although, again, in retrospect, I see how it served me well. But I felt sometimes like a bit of a fish out of water. I'm a big feeler. I like, you know, philosophy and all these different things. And it didn't always kind of fit. And then I got into the federal government through another sort of international experience I had working at the Canadian Pavilion at Expo overseas in Germany. I was like a guide in the pavilion for people coming through. And a job opened up in Ottawa just as I was finishing my marketing degree doing business sponsorship for Canadian presence at international exposition. So my boyfriend, now husband, my boyfriend at the time was living in Ottawa already for work. And so it was kind of like everything just came together and it fell in my lap. I mean, I applied and went through the process, but it fell in my lap. And then the thing I found, I had several years within the government. Once you're in, it's very easy to stay in. And if you don't particularly feel like a job is a good fit, you look for something else in government, sometimes at the same level, sometimes higher. And I would say that I was constantly kind of orienting towards something that I couldn't quite put my finger on, thinking I might eventually get there. And I think the closest I got was the last job that I had, which was working in immigration, refugees, and citizenship on policies and programming for creating welcoming communities and newcomer integration and that kind of thing. On paper, it looked like a great fit, but it was still really not directly connected with the people. It's the people who are working, doing the ground level work in the immigrant serving agencies who are really touching. I mean, I think those policies and programs are important, but I am more of the person that needs to be on the ground and connecting with them. So it never really quite felt like it was perfectly aligned.
So, Carla, this niggle, because I think a lot of people find themselves in work situations, in jobs where they're not quite sure what it is, but as you call it, it's the niggle. So what advice would you give to people around dealing with that? Because a lot of people feel, oh, I've gone to university, I've invested my time, I'm a little risk adverse. I can't give up the good pension. So how did you move through that and eventually come to the conclusion that you had to find something else?
I would say, I'll just drop the bomb right now.
Okay.
Do it.
Death. It really was. I moved to North Carolina with my husband and our two young kids. Our second child was newborn, and my husband had a fellowship there at Duke. So we moved down there. It sort of extracted me from the government town, helped me to see that there are other things out there, other ways of living, other possibilities. And I really wanted to use that time outside of Ottawa to try to figure something else out while also being busy home with kids. And so I started taking people out for coffee who I found interesting, even if I didn't see myself doing what they were doing. It's kind of like what you get to do in your podcast, actually. You get to hear their stories. And that's what I was doing. I was like, what? I want to hear about your journey. I want to hear how you ended up here. What do you recommend? And one of the people who I met with, her name's Mitzi. She had become a friend there through the music community. And she's a grief and bereavement counselor. And Mitzi, was telling her that I want to do something that's heart-centered, that where I connect with people, not sure what it is, like, is anyone ever going to pay me for this kind of work? And she said, you might want to just start by volunteering with hospice. She was very involved in Duke Hospice. And so I did. I started volunteering with hospice there. And then I started attending death cafes. And if you're not familiar with Death Cafe, just briefly, it's they happen all over the world in any given night or day. And it's basically just creating a place to normalize conversations around dying and death over coffee, tea, dainties, that kind of thing. And so I started attending them there. And then we moved back to Saskatoon after being away, like I said, in our pre-recording chat, that we were gone for about 13 years. And when I came back, I returned to work for the federal government. But from here, I was teleworking. And in the meantime, I was trying to carve out time to just explore those I called niggles, like something's not right. But here I was trying to explore the heart crumbs, as I kind of call them, like the little sparks that were lighting me up without really knowing. It was tough because I didn't know where it was leading or what the end result might be or could look like. But I was just trying to follow them. And so started hosting death cafes here. And then I became the person who's interested in death. And so people kept sending me things. Oh, Carla, you would be interested in this or that. And through that, I co-founded, along with a local person, Catherine Green, a local chapter of Threshold Choir to sing at the bedsides of the seriously ill and dying. And I did a home funeral practicum. And there were just all these things that were coming together around death. And meanwhile, you know, so my own mortality started to become more clear. And at a certain point, I just thought, you know what, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, I will regret that I didn't at least give something else a try. So I had a baby, not for that reason, but I had another baby, a third, and never went back. I took a leave of absence as long as I could, just to kind of have that safety net, and then finally severed the ties a couple of years ago.
So I'm really curious. I love how you described it, your heart crumbs. So did you feel when you were exploring that, did you feel a different energy about yourself? Like, was your being different? Did you have more energy, more positive? And did you notice at the time that you're actually in a kind of a better state than you were, you know, in your career kind of thing? Were you conscious of that?
Yes, I was. That's a great question. And I don't want to fast forward too much, but there are so many times in my work where I come home and I'm like, cheeks are flushed and I'm lit up and I feel like embodying, and it comes easy, you know, it's like just being in a flow state sort of thing. It's a very good feeling I don't think people necessarily need to quit their jobs and pension and benefits to do this, but finding something that lights you up in that way, I think is essential to really truly living.
But I think that maybe many of us are not prepared to be really aware of noticing those things. I think there's a level of awareness that one has to have in order to see these hard crumbs that were lighting you up, and to be able to follow those. Did you always know that you were going to follow the things that were lighting you up, or did you have any sense that maybe it was too risky, or you didn't really know where it was taking you?
I felt all those things all at once. So it wasn't an easy decision to make. It was very scary. I'm privileged in that I have a husband who's very supportive and had, you know, a stable job so I could take the risk. I also am grateful that my kids were the ages they were, although it was a really busy time. I felt like it kind of gave me an excuse to take some time away from the regular 9-to-5 and try something different. So, but it was not a cut and dry, easy transition to make, I wouldn't say. But, you know, you said, was I always aware of those heart crumbs? And I'm sure we're getting there, and I'm trying to hold myself back from jumping too far ahead. But my first kind of foray into more heart-centered work was through all these different volunteer things, death cafes, Threshold Choir, those different things. And then I went and retrained as a life cycle celebrant. And that really was like I realized, partway through that it was really like a return to something that I've always known. As a kid, if you'd asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said I wanted to be a part-time preacher, part-time teacher, without really thinking much about it. You know, it was just what came up. It come from a family of teachers. I've always been a person who's very much oriented toward deep connections, awe, spirituality, and I'm not afraid to sort of go places that some people feel like they might have a block towards. And I think that's part of what I try to do and what I think people who have worked with me, I hope, have found is that like creating an opening to that. There are all these different levels of the way people can approach things. And for I'm a good fit for some and not for everyone. But I think for some people, it's like an entry point into, okay, what is essential? You know, the celebrant work, a lot of the work that I do is funerals, like, you know, memorials, weddings, and baby blessings. And part of that, I would say, is because a lot of people don't remember that it's possible to mark transitions throughout our lives. It's like we've kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater, with religion, and then these are the big three that we might still do something for. And often they're very much kind of surface level and they don't get to the essential. And so that's what I do in my work, is I help people to get at what is essential in this story, in this experience, in this transformation, whether you're, you know, adjusting to life now without the physical presence of a loved one who's died, whether you're going from your life as two single people to a new chapter together, whatever it might be, honoring who has been with you along the way, what has shaped you, who has shaped you, and all of those things.
Carla, this is fascinating. I'm curious, is there an industry of life cycle celebrants, or did you create this?
It's a thing. It's a certification that I got through the Celebrant Foundation and Institute. And so I'm connected with life cycle celebrant colleagues, mostly I would say in North America, but in other parts of the world as well. What connects us is this approach of really upholding the values and beliefs of the people we work with. So my beliefs are really irrelevant. And unless it really transgresses some, you know, ethical mind, I seek to uphold whatever is valuable for the people, their values, their beliefs, their story, their personalities, right? And so I always start with the story, not with the structure of a ceremony. But I will say that, so it attracts a certain kind of person, a certain kind of listener, heart-centered, usually all of these things. But every person is so different because of the nature of it. It's a creative vocation. And so people bring their whole selves to it. And, you know, your whole self is different from mine. Some have yogic backgrounds. Some are affiliated with faith traditions. You've got like people who might be clergy or be a lay person in their faith tradition, but want to offer these types of services to their community. You have meditation instructors or lots of, so it is really possible to find the person that's the right fit for you.
So has the niggle gone?
I would say when I discovered the path to become a life cycle celebrant, it was so many things all at once. It was like I had really felt despair before that about what am I going to do? Am I going to just continue on like this in this work that I find quite soulless? Or, you know, what am I going to have to give up? All of these things. What will people, like I said, will people want to work with me? Is this something that people want? Is it just me? And when I discovered that, this is a way I can bring all of these seemingly disparate things and parts of myself together into one offering, it was a beautiful thing that touched me deep inside. And I've always known that that's not it, that there is more, and that I will continue to learn. I mean, you know, I didn't stop at that certification. I'm constantly doing other classes and reading and all kinds of things. And then the experience that I get every person that I work with is a whole new world of story and experience and lessons and teachings. And so I'm as much a student on this path as I am helping or guide people on theirs. So, and I would say the niggle, you ask about the niggle. So I had another niggle about this time last year. It was one of the classes I was doing was for professional officiants. And actually I took it with, I'll give a shout out to her. Her name is Maureen Cotton. She's in Boston area. She has a wedding, a website called The Soulful Wedding. And we have similar approaches in the way we work with people. And one of the questions she asked me as part of the course was, you know, she suggested that I might want to look at having different websites, different social media presence for my weddings, for my funerals, to not confuse people. She thought it might confuse newly engaged couples to land on my site and see Celebration of Life, or, you know, Bree Family land and see newly engaged couples. And so that made me really think about, because it didn't really sit right for me. So there was that niggle. It's like, hey, what is essential for me in this work? And why don't I want to separate them? Because I really do see them as integrated. And that's where this idea of legacy guide has come from. Because for me, ever since the beginning of this transformation, this big change in my work life, it's been death sort of as the thing that's given me the guts to try something new. You know, when I work with people in those milestone moments, those are like, you asked about the flow state before. It's like when you're in that ceremony space, if it's done well, it's like you're in a different time and space. There's a shift that's happening at a soul level, and it can be felt not just by the people who are being honored, but by their community, if it's done well and with intention and attention. And I'm realizing that, you know, well, there's the fact that no one ceremony or event is happy, joyful, 100%. No one is full of grief, and that's it. There's always, there's like this messiness to life. And I think we can access those things all along the way. And each, you know, in a funeral, I'm getting to know the story of the person, and it's not one vocation that they did or one specific story. It's the story of their life. And the story comes out because of the relationships they had and the decisions they made. And so my work as a legacy guide is to help people tease out what is essential, not at this milestone moment, but in your life. And how do you want to live into that? Look at how are you in alignment with that? How do you want to live into it so that when you get to the end, which we all will, you're not looking back with regrets and woulda, shoulda.
Now, you've mentioned soul a couple of times, and I guess in my experience, soul is, it's always associated, well, it has been in my experience, with spirituality and with religion. And I'm not getting a sense from you that that's what the soul means in the context of a legacy guide or a celebrant. How does the soul fit into these constructs, you know, my constructs of what religion is and spirituality?
I would say, first of all, that language is very loaded and can carry a lot of baggage. And depending on your history and how you grew up and your, you know, traditions that have moved you or disgusted you or enlivened you will shape how you react to certain words. So even when I'm working with clients, I try to offer up all kinds of different ways of imagining what is this thing that is transcendent or bigger than us, or, and how do you experience it? And for some people, it's a nameable other bigger being. For some people, it's tucking their kids in at night and feeling their heartbeat and feeling this overwhelming sense of love. For some people, it's being out in the middle of a lake on a sunny day. I think there are so many different ways to experience it, and any way that we try to define it will never measure up to what it is. So it's hard for me to describe really that. And I think it's feeling and an experience that if you know, you know. If you've had it, you know. And I guess this is part of my work again, and why I've been grateful to not be in a hurry to have tons of clients and get out there and be busy full time with working with so many people, because I've been able to take a real deep dive and help people access a place that sometimes they're ready to go there, have a rich spiritual life, and other times they might not have the language or the experience around it. And so it's like helping people access this side. I remember this is slightly different, but I remember singing at the bedside of someone who was dying in the convalescent home a number of years ago with Threshold Choir. We were invited into their room by the family. The person was laying in bed, dying. There were three, I think, family members there. It was quite tight in the room. You know, person on the chair on one side of the bed, person on the chair on the other side, and then a person kind of wedged up against the dresser. And we had to kind of wedge ourselves in there too. So it was quite tight pre-pandemic. And I remember sort of not being able to kind of take everyone in the room in just because of the angle, and it was a bit awkward. I couldn't quite get a sense of how this was landing on that person at the end of the bed. We were there to sing for the dying person, but it can be a real gift for the family as well. And he was, I'm going to go with a very, like the stereotypical judging mind of, you know, he kind of looked like maybe a farmer, or he didn't look like the kind of guy who would necessarily ask you to a Threshold Choir to come sing lullabies for their dying person, as judgmental as that sounds. And afterwards, we went out to the lobby as we were leaving, and he came out and he said, I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I'm not a religious person. I'm not a musician or whatever, but you took me to a place that I didn't know existed. And it's like finding that opening, whatever it is for a person, we all have this inner world going on, and we're able to access it with the right approaches that are gentle and that are open to the fact that there are a multitude of ways to experience transcendence or deep connection, meaning making, all of those things.
What a gift, Carla, that you have, and what an amazing journey you've been on. And you know, I think it really speaks to the importance of listening to those signs that we have for ourselves. But you're right, it can be as much a challenge as figuring out, what do I do with this? What is it? I know what it's not, but I don't know what it is. And so, you know, to hear your experience of going through to finding, you know, what that looks like, I think is quite remarkable. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you both very much.
If you've learned just one thing about change while listening to this podcast, please subscribe on Apple or Spotify and share with a friend. This episode recorded via Zoom audio. Producers Peggy Koenig and Catherine Greiba. Executive producer Koenig Leadership Advisory. Theme music La Pompeii, written by Chris Harrington, music publisher Invato Market. For information on this podcast, please visit www.getyourgoat.ca.